Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Show. I'm your host, Pop Art Painter Jamie Rocks, and we are back after the long weekend and glad to be back. I'm taking a painting break for a little bit tonight. Boy, do we have a cool show. We have a very, very cool guest on, a filmmaker, writer, director, and we're going to be talking to him about his cool movie. This movie, I like this movie a lot. Mr. Ryan Colucci, I probably said that wrong again, and I said I wouldn't. Ryan, I'm sorry.
No,
good. Did I mess
Colucci.
It up? Oh, okay.
No, Colucci.
There we go. Colucci, I got it. All right. Ryan, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Awesome.
I know you had some rough times with the hurricane.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I want to apologize and thank you for rescheduling. Yeah, it came on. I tell you, the hurricane wasn't so bad. I mean, it was bad, but it wasn't for us personally. It was the week without power that followed that was the that tested our mettle a little bit. you're in Southern California, right? Los Angeles?
No, currently I'm in New York.
You're in New York. Okay.
I'm fairly bi-coastal. But I spent most of this year in Europe animated, hand-drawn animated projects. And then when I was coming back, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go to hang out with my family and work from here. So
nice.
I'm in Long Island right now.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, we in South Florida here, it was crazy. And in summer, too, the being without, you know, you just take it for granted, the thermostat. Kicks in and you've got air conditioning and all that. When you don't, there were many times that week, though, I was getting annoyed and I would think to myself, well, you know, a lot of people in the world, this is how they live every day. So you can deal with it. And we did. But thanks again for rescheduling. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, people are dealing with real tragedy. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So you grew up in Long Island, right?
Yeah, that is correct. Spent most of my life here.
Nice. For those who don't know, of course, well, how do you not know about Long Island? Long Island is an island, and, well, it's long. Yeah, no, it's outside of New York there, and a lot of people from Long Island. Very, very cool. Well, the reason I was asking is this is such a fantastic movie, Suburban Cowboy. Now, you wrote and co-directed this film, right?
Yes, and I produced and edited it as well.
Yeah? Wow. A man of many hats. Very, very cool. Well, it's set in Long Island, so, Ryan, I just got to come out and say it. I like these types of films. I hope this wasn't biographical of people you knew growing up, because...
Yeah, yeah.
People.
It actually is. It's,
Oh!
A buddy of mine who I've known since about college years from Long Island, just from
right.
The gym and hanging out with the same people. I knew that he was a drug dealer, but you know, he wasn't a criminal.
We
hung out in the same places, went to the same bars, worked out at the same gym. He always had a little bit more money than everybody else, and he always had a stripper girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, he didn't look like that stock villain that you see in a movie that you say, oh, he's a gangster. And that always fascinated
right.
me. And we kind of grew a little bit closer over the last few years. And he knew I was in filmmaking, and he said, hey, I wrote this, my autobiography, the last time I was in prison. I was like, I don't even know you're in prison. So he handed me this thing. It was basically on note cards written in chicken scratch. I was like, I can't read this, man. You need to type it out. Typed it out. I read it. And there were some cool bits in there. But it was really episodic. Like, you know, his everyone thinks their life is really interesting until they write it down, and just, you know, it's not.
Right.
But there was, for the most part, it was, I dated this stripper, I made this drug deal, I dated this stripper, I got robbed, I dated this stripper, I robbed this person, I dated this stripper, I made this drug deal. And I was like, these are all kind of, like, little cool moments, but can I just take the stuff that's really good and make it a story that makes sense from A to Z? And he said, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So I took pieces of that, wrote my own story, and then he would weigh in on things that I'd like, specific names of weed strains, because he was one of the largest right. marijuana suppliers on Long Island, which is a pretty big place and right outside New York City. But he was never big. Like, that fascinated me too. Like, he was never going to be bigger than he was. He was not going to be Scarface.
Right.
He was always going to be this mid-level guy that had, you know, 300 pounds at a time, but was never operating on this entirely different level. So that
right.
interests me. It interests me that this guy, you know, could be your neighbor and you don't know, because in this world that I grew up in, not everyone looks like they rolled out of a gangster movie.
Right. I know exactly what you. I grew up in Detroit, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It's and it's crazy because you're friends with people. You know, it's funny, and I'm like you. Sometimes will say this and not even think, kind of say it nonchalantly, like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, yeah, such and such. He's a criminal, or he did this or that." You know, and people are like, "Why were you hanging?" Well, he was my friend. you know, I just
yeah, I mean, like,
it wasn't
so
like we were hanging out with people
one day. Yeah, like
right,
the government
right.
decided one day, hey, weed's illegal. It's not like this guy wakes up and twiddles his mustache and says, "Oh, I'm an evil villain." He's just a guy. Like, what happened with this guy is he was dealing in high school, and he was making good money and getting girls from it. So he was the guy that never stopped. You know, that
right.
catches up to you when you're 30. Either you're going to progress and you know, there's very limited options. Jail, death, or you make a killing and you segue into another career. He never did that, segueing
right.
into another career. So actually, when we were when I finished the first draft, right about when I finished it, he got arrested again. He was moving from weed to MDMA, and he was getting it imported from China really cheap. And he got busted. One of his boxes at UPS got busted. So I actually rewrote the script slightly based on that
right.
at the end. But, you know, he actually – that was right when I wrote the first draft, and then he was in for a few years, and he got out this March. So he actually didn't even see the movie or know anything until about March or April, and then he finally saw it.
Well, what did he think? Like, what did he say when he saw the,
well, I mean, he
saw
was
the
just,
finished product?
Like,
I'm curious.
He was psyched that it got made, and he didn't realize what happened at the end, how I rewrote things. I don't necessarily want to give it away right now. Hopefully someone watches the movie.
Right, yeah.
That's listening. But there's it's not – would you call it a twist? I don't know if I'd call it a twist. It's just kind of, in my mind, the logical progression of events that happens towards the end. And he was kind of like, whoa, I didn't see that coming, because it wasn't in the first draft. But for the most part, he was really excited. You know, in his mind, he's the hero. But this guy is a fake creation. You know, the guy in the movie is a fake creation based on kind of a story I got. But in my buddy's mind, he is like, you know, he's a cowboy. He's Clint Eastwood.
Well, everybody looks at themselves perhaps with a different lens than the world does. you know, sometimes it's
yeah,
good,
I mean,
sometimes
that,
like, bad, you know.
Everyone's the star of their own TV show, right? Like, you know, I wake up, I'm an introverted person, but I'm the star of the Ryan show.
Right. I was at a party, and this was, I don't know, a few months back, and we were talking. somebody that, you know, just party conversation, and this guy who happened to be an actor had mentioned, you know, I kind of wandered into his conversation with some people, and it was getting a little deep, but he had mentioned, he's like, you know, every villain's a hero to himself. And I kind of thought about that. Now, that might have been the martini thinking. I don't know, but I was like, you know, that's very true.
I forget who said it, but I remember hearing it a long time ago. And it had an impact on all my writing because I write really dark things, and a lot of it, I kind of sometimes hopefully side with the villain. But I had read that, like, you know, the villain doesn't wake up twirling his mustache in the morning. Like, he wakes up thinking he's a great guy. One of the worst human beings that's ever existed, like, Hitler didn't wake up and think, I'm really evil. He thought he was doing a good job. So if you can bring that perspective to a story, then I think maybe you tell a better story because you're not so one-sided.
Absolutely. I kind of enjoy a movie. I tell you, it's weird. It's almost like, I don't know, pressing against a cut or something. I was watching a movie that's not even a crime movie the other day. It was on Netflix. I was watching The Founder with Michael Keaton, you know, do the Ray Kroc McDonald story. And at the first, you know, you're watching the movie and you're like, oh man, I really hope this guy makes it. He's really, you know, he's trying real hard, and you relate to him. At least I was, you know. And then when riches and money and all this comes into it and all the business stuff, he wasn't really nice, you know, at all. And you're kind of like, oh, I want to still like him, but I don't know if I can. I like that journey when you get invested in a character like that. And your movie, the characters, you're absolutely right. Like I said, it reminded me of several people I kind of knew growing up and whatnot. But yeah, it usually doesn't end real well. And I'm not saying that in the movie. I'm not giving anything away. That lifestyle is what I'm saying. It's a lot about
it. Like, it was someone had asked me that hadn't seen it, or interviewer, because we premiered in Austin last year. It was our only fest, and then the distributor was like, no, let's no more festivals. Let's save it till the release. But they asked, like, hey, is this glamorizing drugs and selling drugs? I was like, no, this is the anti, like, I don't think anyone watches this movie and said, I want to be a drug dealer when I grow up. And it wasn't, you know, I don't have a moral compass when it comes to that in terms of this specific movie. Like, I'm not making a statement on whether it's good or bad. It's kind of indifferent towards that. But I would think that if you watch this, things don't turn out well. What was more important to me was being authentic to this world and to the characters and to the people, and trying to be as authentic as possible. But when I think you do that in this type of story, you have no choice but to be on the opposite side of glamour. Because for the most part, this is not a glamorous world, as much as movies and things want to make it look glamorous, like Blow and movies like that. Even there, nothing turns out well.
And that's just it. When they do, I love Pulp Fiction. I love it artistically, and I like it's a fun. It was a fun movie, still is. But at the end, you know. Or in the beginning, it's, well, you know, when you piece it all together and everything, it doesn't turn out well for Vincent, you know? He may be cool, you know, when on a fun date, but it's not good.
It definitely does not. Know? No. When you wind up dead, it's usually not a good thing.
Right, exactly. It's crazy. No, this is actually going to be out for the public on the 15th, right?
No, it's out. It came out in August.
Oh, it is out. Came out in August. Yeah, my show notes are wrong. That's okay.
It's probably show notes from when we were supposed to talk the first time.
I gotcha.
That's
exactly what it is.
Yeah, so no worries. But it came out in August. It's out digitally. So it's out on iTunes, Amazon, Voodoo, Xbox, Dish, DirecTV, cable providers, the PlayStation Store. everywhere like that. It won't be on, everyone says, especially my family, when's it going to be on Netflix? I'm like, hopefully never, but it'll be on Netflix in a few months. You need a window where people can actually rent it and buy it. Netflix is the last stop for movies, unless it's a Netflix project.
Right.
I think
it's
just become ubiquitous with digital streaming now. And people just say, when's it on Netflix?
Yeah, like Xerox with paper Kleenex
and
whatnot. It's one of those. There's a term for that, and I can't. It's on the tip of my tongue. If it was a Jeopardy question, I'd be losing all my money right now. But yeah, no, absolutely. But you know, the cool thing is I think there's at least the people we know in our house. We kind of cut cable off just because we're like, why are we paying for all this? I don't need 14 home shopping channels to pay for. But we have, you know, all the streaming stuff hooked up to our main televisions and whatnot, and that's how we watch television now. And it's great because, you know, with Amazon and stuff, you can watch, or any of those streaming services, you can watch, you know, movies like Suburban Cowboy and whatnot right from your home. And that is cool, man. That is very, very cool.
Yeah, we're in 300 million homes. I try to wrap my head around that, and I can't. Because
pretty awesome.
It's cool, but you know how many people actually know that Suburban Cowboy exists right now? Like, it's a lot of, you know, thankfully people like you that are willing to watch it and talk to me about it. Is getting the word out. But it is kind of cool thinking there is a chance someone could stumble upon this that's never seen it, and I'm sure it's happened a few dozen, if not thousand times that. They watch it and we're like, wow, this movie's awesome. And I'm sure there's people that watch it and go, this is evil and dark and I don't like it.
It's interesting because people, I think people say that, but at the same time, I mean, even my gal, she manages an Ulta store, a makeup store. So a lot of her friends are, you know, little kind of normal gals that are in that world, and you know, they all watch murder shows. You know, Snapped has giant ratings. That's something about her friends, maybe, but they all like it. You know, they all like a good story. And I think that there's not a lot of well done. What's the term here? Well, here it is in my notes. A gritty story.
The hidden world of
it's
a crime thriller, and you know, there are a few, and then you know, God, I watch everything that comes on Netflix or Amazon Prime that is anywhere in the realm of this movie. Just one, I love the genre, and a lot of it, for me, they were casting. You know, when it kills me when they'll cast like a model-looking dude as the tough guy in the lead, and you know, and then I just know it's not going to be good because I'm like, this person's not trying to be authentic. So when we were casting, and listen, I'm not saying that you know, every single choice I made was the right choice, but it was important to me to go the opposite route of that. Not that like I was looking for people that weren't attractive, but I just wanted people that looked like they were real, like they actually existed in this world. And when we took out the breakdown, which is what goes to all the agents and actors for the movie, the thing we got in for the lead was 99% of them were like pretty boy ex-models. And I was like, none of these people are right. None of these people are tough. Like, I wouldn't choose any of these guys in a street fight. And it took a long time to find that person. And in fact, the person that we chose didn't even try out for the lead part. He tried out for a different part. And we were like, can this guy come in and read for this lead part? And his manager goes, well, you know, that's for the lead, right? Like, he tried out for this thing. And we were like, are you really not want your lead actor to try out for the lead now? Like, what are you insane?
Right.
Even the girls, like, you know, I think our lead girl is pretty, but it was important for her not to look like she just rolled off a page of Playboy. She needed to look like a human being that, you know, it's called Suburban Cowboy. I wanted it to be like the person that could live on your street.
Right.
So that was really important. important to me that they just were authentic.
And I think that's a good thing. You know, it's like I love Westerns, and but like from, I would say, mid-60s on, maybe late-60s on, because I don't like to watch a Western. Not that this movie is a Western by any means, but I'm just making an observation that the old-timey Westerns are liked. I mean, these guys would be out on the range for a week, and they're all clean-shaven, their shirts ironed. I'm like,
guy's been sleeping on rocks for a week.
Yeah.
He looks awfully good. You know? I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Because the range is actually the back lot of, you know, Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, shiny cowboy boots. Come on now. No, and it's true, though, because,
yeah, for
you know,
sure.
In any bedroom community, suburban community, yeah, you're right. The those guys in that world is, you know, in that business and whatnot, they're not, even the guys that go to clubs a lot, I mean, yeah, they may freak of Axe spray, but, you know, it's, they're not coming from photo shoots and stuff. Usually.
No, and I think for the most part, like, this guy I know, who is indicative of a lot of these guys I know, they're always surrounded by a pretty girl, but if he wasn't flashing money around and getting bottles at clubs, he'd wind up with a girl with, you know, snaggle teeth at the end of the bar, because like he lives and dies on the fact that, you know, hey, he can give her a few pills of ecstasy and, you know, a good weekend in Vegas.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Now, you can't just call yourself an expert. You got to earn that title. And at Wingstop, we've been earning it for decades. Want the secret? Start from scratch. Make to order. Sauce by hand in one of 11 mind-melting flavors. Serve hot with scratch-made ranch. Repeat for over 20 years. That's how you become an expert. Wingstop, the wing experts.
Hey guys, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year I was on holiday with my girlfriend Danny. We were at Disney World and having a great time. It's the happiest place on earth. And I dropped my vape, just like a Butterfingers, and it was a pain in the neck. They just don't have anything there to replace it and whatnot. So we had to drive 45 minutes each way to get a new one. And, you know, that's an hour and a half out of our day, man. But anyway, that wouldn't have happened because if I would have had this fantastic new product, the C-Ring. It's very, very cool. What it is it attaches to your vape, designed to protect your investment with comfort, flexibility while doing your day-to-day activity. What it does is it goes in there, you put your finger in there, and you hold it, and you're not dropping your vape, breaking it and whatnot. It's very, very cool, and if you need both hands, they have a lanyard you can hook to, and it's awesome. It's awesome. The C-Ring, you can find out more about it and pick one up at their website, www.thecring.com. Again, that's www.thecring.com. Be smart, be like me, get a C-Ring if you're a vapor. Very, very good. Oh, and hey, holidays are coming up, man. This is a very cool gift for somebody. If you have somebody on your shopping list that vapes like I do, get them a C-Ring. Thecring.com.
Rocks Gear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
In October, you can help others while you heal yourself. L'Apothecary Unique is donating a portion of our proceeds to the Cancer Center. L'Apothecary Unique is the place to go for holistic, gluten-free skincare products. Each product starts from scratch in Tennessee, where all the flowers and herbs are homegrown. Everything is handmade and made to order. Lapothecary Unique also offers hair care, beard and mustache oil and balm, smudge sticks, blessings oil, and medicinal salves. Use the code THINKPINK the entire month of October to get 10% off your purchase. Remember, we're also donating part of every sale in October to the Cancer Center. www.etsy.com/shop/lapothecaryunique.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the other thing that's important to me, too, is for this movie, I think a lot of times in these crime thrillers or gangster, you know, quote-unquote gangster movies you see nowadays, everything has a hip-hop soundtrack. And the world I come from is not a hip-hop world, even though it's New York. The world I come from is a house music world. And this, specifically these people that I know, too. So our soundtrack is like the anti-hip-hop gangster soundtrack. It's all, you know, my partner on the film who I directed with is one of the bigger EDM DJs in the world, Dragan Ganovich, who is Dirty South, and he's had a few Grammy nominations in the world of electronic music, and it was important for Prof to kind of latch onto that sort of New York early 2000s house music vibe.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, years ago, many, many years ago, when I traveled around and couldn't afford plane tickets or anything, I used to go by bus a lot. I've ridden the old Greyhound, the old Dirty Dog, a few times. And if you ever see a really good-looking person at the Greyhound, don't sit by them because the police are going to be there taking them away soon. Every time. I see what you're saying, man. And, you know, that's cool with the house music, too, because that is very indicative of that world. That's what you hear.
I know this world because I come from it. I mean, I don't deal drugs, and I don't even really do drugs, but it doesn't mean, like, when I go out and the people from this movie go out, the real-life people, they listen to house music.
Right.
We listen to house music in our cars. We listen, you know, we go see DJs and also, I'm just so sick of seeing the same movie over and over again, which is the crime thriller with pretty people and hip-hop music. I feel like I've seen it all. They're all carbon copies of each other.
It's
not like I think I made God's gift to the crime thriller, but I hope that it's a unique entry into this world. You know, I think we do some – there are two scenes specifically where we do some things that are interesting visually. And I would love to know what you think with the dance sequence and then the shadow on the wall.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It is. And, you know, it is interesting, the use of light and shadow in the movie to affect mood and whatnot. Some people just don't get that, you know. An artist does. I'm not in the film business. That's actually what I do for a living, is I paint pictures of people. And I know how important light is. And especially when you're going for an overall feel of something. And I liked this. And I liked that every scene wasn't just out of, like you said, out of Vogue magazine, Playboy magazine or something. You know, it was... It was gritty. It was filmed with a grittiness. I'm sure you kind of
It didn't happen, you know, by chance. It actually takes a lot of effort when you're shooting something now digitally, because we shot on the Red Dragon at 6K, which is a crystal clear image. It takes a lot of effort to get it to look more filmic. And you know, the more filmic, like, we wanted to push it to almost be 16 millimeter. Obviously, you can't push it that far. It starts to look really muddy. But, you know, we wanted a really high contrast, gritty film so that – and we wanted – it was important for our blacks to be really black. And, you know, when we use color, hopefully the color pops, because we don't use color a lot.
Right, right. Well, it almost had a film noir aspect to it, but modern. I don't want to say that because I don't want it to sound like this movie seems dated by any means. This movie does bring me back to, like you were saying, the mid 2000s, maybe early 2000s. And
that's what I was going for, actually. Like, there's a specific time period in the late 90s, early 2000s of movies that were being done kind of independently that was happening as I was making this career choice into film when I was 18, 19. And they left an indelible mark on me. And that's the, like, a lot of it was being shot on 16 millimeter or Super 16 or 35, and just they didn't have any money to color it, or something like the original Pusher trilogy, which is probably my biggest inspiration for this, by Nicholas Winding Refn, was 1996, shot on Super 16. It's Mads Mikkelsen's first film. The rawness of it, the grittiness of it, was just like mind blowing to me. And I wanted to kind of bring that, because I felt like if you start polishing this film up too much, you're also treating it like you have these major stars and everything, and we didn't. So it actually enabled us to kind of push the independent look and feel, which actually I think lends to the movie more, because it is darker, it is grittier. If you start polishing it up, you're selling something that it's not.
Right. Well, and it resonates, and I think it resonates. It did with me, at least, ladies and gentlemen.
That's good.
I have no problem saying that. You know, it did resonate. These were people I felt I knew. Know what were you saying?
Oh, saying sometimes you work in a vacuum, you know, with the people that you're making the movie with, and yeah, you have people that weigh in, but you don't really know how people react and these decisions that you make, if people respond to them. So it's good that, you know, I'm talking to you and you're saying, yeah, I did, I got it. That's great to hear. That's amazing to hear, because you want to think that you make the right decisions, and all you can do is make the decisions that for a movie that I want to see, that I want to be a part of, that I feel like if I sat down in the theater and saw this, I would be happy, I would be excited. And you just have to hope that the rest of the people watching agree. Or at least get it. And so far, so good. But
I'm telling you, I watched it, and I didn't send a link, but I'm going to now, because I didn't realize it was out yet. But I did send the IMDb page and a synopsis to a very old friend of mine. Let me put it this way: it will resonate with as well. He's not in that world anymore. He was one of those guys who segued out of it. But thank God, you know. Very successful in what he does. I don't want to say any names in the air, but in case anyone's listening, but from him or his ex-girlfriend or anything. You know, anyone with an axe to grind. But anyway, absolutely. And I was like, man, you're going to be blown away when you watch this when it comes out. But I'll let him know, definitely, it's out now. This thing's got a great rating on Internet Movie Database, you know, and it's got great reviews. I see the reviews for it listed on my Facebook feed and whatnot, and everybody's digging it. Everybody's digging it. And that's got to be a good feeling.
Everything so far. Yeah, honestly, it's hard for me to read the reviews, because you click the link and you just – I hold my eyes closed, and then I open them real slow, hoping for the best. And it's not the first thing I've done. It's the first – it's probably the biggest and most personal. So that's why maybe the – if – but everything so far has been positive. And even if they had something to say that was negative, it's always been counterbalanced with the – positive. There was one review, and I forget what it was, right out of Austin, where it actually made me laugh. It was someone that was so obscenely politically correct that basically was calling me a misogynist and a racist for writing and making the movie as if these characters were me. Which I think is hilarious, because it's like, I mean, you're just going to pretend like life doesn't exist, like these people aren't real. that people don't talk the way they do. You know, art isn't always, or films aren't always supposed to be what you, the ideal society. This is, you know, this is people.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's a mirror.
They talk
art
like
is
this.
A mirror.
They act like this. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was laughing. I was like, this guy's such a little pussy. I don't know if I can say that on the air, but.
Oh, absolutely. We're on the internet. And
right, yeah, I mean, the guy was a little pussy. I just pictured this, like, little guy melting as he saw this movie and, like, getting mad at me.
Right.
So, like, what are you going to do? Like, I'm never going to convince this guy that the movie is something that it's not, or to him. So he's entitled to his opinion, and, you know, more power to him, but.
And even trying to convince someone like that, if you're kicking water uphill, man. You ain't gonna win. You know,
you just have to say for any sort of negative review that comes, you know, thank you for even taking the time to read or watch what I created. Because at the end of the day, even if he hates it, he spent an hour and a half of his life on it, plus whatever time it took him to write it. So. You know, I can't. Thank you for that, I guess.
I hear you.
But for the most part,
I get the same thing.
And even on the sales side, when we were shopping the film, there were a lot of big distributors that said, like, we really like this, but we can't put it out in a theater because there's no stars in it, which we knew. Like, I never knew, thought in a million years it was going to go into a theater. It was, you know, our budget was so low that. It didn't require it, which allowed us to take some chances on things. But hearing that was really, you know, kind of put me at ease.
Mm-hmm. No, you knew you were doing something right. You know, and that's just it. You don't want it. No one wants to create art. And I don't care what you're doing. If you're, you know, making baskets or whatever, making movies or paintings or music. No one wants to be that cookie cutter, sanitized for the masses, you know, thing. It's that's death for the creative person. You know, nobody.
Yeah,
the money's there.
Although I went to USC for grad school for producing, and I'll tell you right now, about three quarters of my class would kill to be that bland, rich, success, you know, like person, but they. Those aren't the creative types. They were more development executive types.
Right.
You know, the ones that are actually creating stuff and producing stuff on their own are all doing pretty unique stuff with a voice.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Velvet Mayhem. Super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, tosots.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hey everybody, pop artist Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year, at the end of last year, some people, we've got quite a few inquiries where people wanted paintings, but, you know, the economy's getting better, but it's still kind of rough for a lot of people, and they just can't afford my normal larger paintings. You know, they love my work, but they just can't afford the big ones. So what we did on that is I've been picking different themes and painting smaller ones, 16 by 20 canvas, perfect size canvas for an apartment or a room. It's not overwhelming. It's not a big, huge thing you'd see in a gallery or in a big millionaire's house. But it's good. And what they are, we've been selling those on eBay. So if you go to the website, www.jamierocks.us, you'll see the eBay auctions there. I try to have 4 or 5 per week up at all times. And, you know, we don't have any control over what those sell for. So you might get a good deal. But definitely worth checking out if you're on a budget. And, you know, I hope one of my original paintings will be hanging in your home soon. Thank you for your interest, and on back to the show now.
No, speaking of unique, you did Suburban Cowboy. You got it in the can, and I know that's primarily what we're, you know, promoting tonight.
Yes.
But I have to ask, because I'm fascinated by it, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking at the art and whatnot. Orient City, how did this come about? Now, this is an animated feature.
This is a hand-drawn samurai spaghetti western.
Fantastic.
So,
I did. Yeah. Where do I send a check? Now, see, you needed me at the producer meeting, though. No, you absolutely didn't. You, like, this guy doesn't have any money. But, man, I can get behind that. I can get behind that. That's awesome. How did that happen?
So it's been some, like, so I do graphic novels as well. And my artist on that I've been working with since 2013 is in Budapest, and he came over for the release of our last book called REM, which is really not a superhero graphic novel. It's about a neuroscientist that's trying to beat sleep. So you can imagine those discussions. But we did a book tour. And on that book tour, he was doing commission-based stuff. And I said, you know, the one that's really killing it right now is all your Batman stuff. Because we make a lot of more money to pay for our table and stuff. Because, you go to these things just hoping to break even.
Right.
Selling artwork more than the books, actually. So he had these Batman ones that were awesome that were doing well. And I was like, why don't you do a samurai Batman? And he sketched it out. He drew it. And on a car ride to Chicago and back in a long weekend at C2E2, the story of the Dark Ronin, you know, Batman in a samurai world, and it started off as a Batman story, and then it started, like we were talking about before with the villains, like the Dark Ronin was this evil shogun type, and he was going to be our hero, anti-hero, and then it grew from there, and it was something that we had been going back and forth on in terms of just, like, he would have an idea and he would email it to me and I would just keep this document. And then for Suburban Cowboy actually has hand-drawn animated titles. And there's a shadow that comes to life in the middle. So our movie has not a single visual effect shot. There's not one, not a piece of cleanup, nothing, which is something I'm really proud of because I don't think that's common nowadays, but there's shadow that comes to life, and it's not a visual effect, it's hand-drawn animation, that shadow.
Wow.
So he did that, and him and I did the opening titles, or he animated it, but I was sort of created them, and I applied with those animated titles to South by Southwest as a title competition, just because first thing for a movie that was done, and the movie wasn't even shot yet. And we had done them, and got in, and I kind of didn't even think anything of it. And then I looked to see who else got in, and it was Suburban Cowboy, which is us, this tiny, tiny movie with these hand-drawn animated black and white titles, which look more like my book, REM. And Avengers Age of Ultron, Spectre, the James Bond movie, the Daredevil opening titles, like, So we were looking at this thing, and our jaw was just like, what, on the ground, like, what? Is this real? So everyone had told us how cool it was and everything, and we just looked at each other, and well, we didn't look at each other because he's in Budapest, and I was in California at the time.
Right.
But I had shot Suburban Cowboy, and I had come out of editing it, and I said, we looked kind of at each other from across the pond and said, let's do it. Like, obviously people like what we're doing on the animated side. I have my next live action script, so
mm-hmm.
I'm already pushing that. I have this space in my schedule. Let's do it. So I wound up writing a short based on that. And then the short was supposed to be 6 minutes. We did a Kickstarter. We killed it on Kickstarter. And that went into production last year. We finished it this year. And the 6 minute short wound up being 18 and a half minutes because the story kept growing. So we screwed ourselves because this isn't like, hey, go shoot some more footage. Like, it's three times longer and you have to hand draw everything. So, but then we found an amazing guy who's an investor in things that he believes in. He's not a film investor by trade. He's a lawyer that just saw it and was like, I believe in what you guys are doing. I want to be a part of this. What's it going to take? Now we have I wrote the feature script, brought in two guys to help conceive the world because it was a lot of world building. And then these guys, E. Connor Nickian and Ryland Grant, who actually were part of the editorial process on Suburban Cowboy. And we all kind of hatched the world together, and then I went off and wrote the script. And then as we finished the short on Orient City, which is always supposed to be kind of a real piece, to show people, here's the world, here's what we can do, and here's how it's going to look. I wound up writing the feature script. As soon as we came out of the short, I flew to Budapest, and we storyboarded out the entire feature over the summer. And I came back right before Suburban Cowboy came out, like a few days before it came out, so I can do press for it. But we're in the process of doing the full animatic for the feature, Orient City, right now. And that'll take about another month or two, maybe a little more, depending on if hiccups come up in terms of the edit. Because the point of the animatic is you take all the storyboards and you lay them out in edit so we can see if the script works, we can see the pacing. Because you don't want to go into a hand-drawn animated film not being exact on the what you need to draw and the backgrounds and everything. So that's happening. It's, you know, I'm biased, obviously. I created it, but I can say that it's pretty badass. If anyone wants to just Google Orient City, you can see the teaser for the shorts out. I'll send you the link when we get off the podcast for the short. But the response has been through the roof from the Kickstarter. Obviously, it's pandering to my target audience, but it's still my target audience. And the responses and the compliments are like overwhelmingly positive. And in terms of the quality of the animation that we're able to do, I don't think anyone's doing it for this type of adult-themed content. I just watched Castlevania when I got back from Budapest on Netflix, and that still has a very anime feel to it. And we're on that bridge of, like, Miyazaki and anime and, adult-themed animation that doesn't look like it's so Japanese. Which is a deterrent sometimes for the anime crowd, but it also there's a lot of people that see the anime animation and just say, I'm not into anime. So at the end of the day, it's John Boer's art style, and we have to make the movie that we want to make for ourselves and hope that people like it. But right now, everyone seems to love it, and we'll see who picks it up and runs with it with us in terms of studio. But pretty exciting. It's pretty badass.
It's outstanding. I'm looking at the website right now for it, and I'm just blown away. It's fantastic.
I love the smoke
that's a fraction
overlay
of
and all
where
that.
It is. Yeah, I mean, that's a fraction of where the project currently is because we're so far deep
putting
into the feature and the character design and the world building and the matte painting for the short. Like, you know, the short was a good way. The short was really for us to test our pipeline, meaning like the art pipeline and the production studio pipeline. Because I actually, my first film as a producer was an animated film. I built an animation studio from scratch right out of grad school in LA for it. But that was CG animation, so I wanted to test the 2D pipeline. And it worked flawlessly. It just, you know, with the money that we had, it took a lot longer. So obviously you need more money to condense it to make it make fiscal sense. But it's still relatively cheap compared to anything else out there that's hand-drawn.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm looking at this right now, and as a painter, this is not easy to do.
My hat goes off.
No, it's stunning. John Bork, before we started, John Bork said to me, I want to be able to, for you to pause any frame of the movie, blow it up, and frame it on your wall. And I was like, well, that's pretty big work, buddy. But that was his goal, and so actually one of our rewards on Kickstarter were like massive canvas prints. When we finished, I was like, dude, I'm stressed that these aren't going to blow up as nice as they look. And he was like, I'm confident. And we got them back, and I'm like, oh, man, these look awesome. They're beautiful. So actually, I'm looking at one on my wall right now because I got one as a test. I tested one out, and
right.
It looks incredible. I can buy it with that one because it's his artwork. So when I talk about it and give him praise, it's not like I'm giving myself praise. Like I don't walk around saying Suburban Cowboy is so great, you got to see it. But I can talk about that like Orange City like that.
But I do like the poster for Suburban Cowboy. That is a kick-ass poster, man. That's really well done as well.
Thank you.
I
was actually worried about it, to be honest. Because when you sign with a distributor, we had a poster that John Bor did that was more of an we knew it was never going to last because it was a very artsy poster. It's the the lead guy's inside profile. It was an alternative Dirty Harry poster that I kind of was like ripped the idea off of. And then the Colt 45 makes the outline of his face. And then he has like hair on his face that kind of looks like a wolf. But it was very artsy.
I gotcha.
And I knew they weren't gonna be like, hey, let's run with that. But you never know what you're gonna get back. You don't know if it's gonna look like a Jason Statham movie, or you know how they're trying to sell it, because they have to sell the movie, and you don't want to fight the commerce side of the business. We also want to stay true to the movie. And the distributor actually sent me like three comps, and they were all like pretty good, and I was amazed. I told him that, and he goes, well, I kind of want to sell it like a modern day Mean Streets, because you're Italian American, and it's set on Long Island, it's set in New York, and it's with, you know, that same kind of group of people. I mean, we have a lot more diversity in the cast because that's just how the world is, but I was like, hey, I'm all aboard that idea. But I was really pleasantly surprised with where it was at, and then I just had a few notes, like if you look at the poster, there's the reflection of the city on the back, on the bottom half. Because I thought the poster didn't necessarily say New York, and I wanted it to be a New York set. It is a New York set thing. So I said, what about adding a silhouette of New York? And he was like, that sounds great. Let's do it. So he took my notes. I was like really surprised that he did. But
Well, it's great.
It was cool. Because you hear horror stories. You hear horror stories like, hey, you know, my poster came out and it looks like the guy's jumping across blazing building, shooting AK-47s or whatever. And that's not Suburban Cowboy. You know, I know there's guns in the movie, but it's not a shootout type movie.
Absolutely. I tell you, back, I used to live in San Diego, about a decade ago. And I, at the time, would get extra work sometimes. I knew a couple filmmakers, and they would call me, and they'd say, hey, we need a painting
of, you know, from our movie, which they hadn't shot yet. They were trying to get investors and whatnot. And when they had one real close in the line, they wanted to bring a painting in there kind of as a gift, you know, and to kind of illustrate what they were going for. And it was always really hard for me because, you know, it was nothing to go by except what they were telling me. And, but yeah, I know exactly from the other side what you're talking. And things would change, you know, and they'd be like, well, actually, we cut that idea out. Can you? I'm like, that's what they make white paint for. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I hear you.
That's
hear
a cool side job, no? That's a cool side job.
No,
you
no,
yeah. For painting?
Oh, all the time.
Like
all the time. You know, everybody's trying
like
to get
Star Wars style? Like how they actually
well,
do the
yeah,
paintings
for
those?
You know, not that realistic, in more my style, but kind of pop art looking type stuff. But yeah, I did a couple of mystery type things, and they wanted one in particular comes to mind where they wanted a bust of Pallas, and they, you know, of course, a gal with a gun and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay. And I remember getting it done. They're like, ah, it looks great, except she's a redhead. I'm like, not a problem.
I really like the those like the really old Maltese Falcon type. Like painting posters. I thought
right.
It would be cool
yeah.
to do one for a sort of a modern day if you were doing a movie of that in that vein.
Right.
Obviously it has to
yeah,
fit.
And, that,
and you probably need an alternate poster where it's like the actual picture of the stars because studios freak out and they don't like doing things that are artsy. You notice, like,
right,
all posters
absolutely.
Have the same color scheme. Like, it's that blue and orange, or that
oh, yeah.
sort of greenish
and
black,
the same
white.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very true. Well, it's cool that you mentioned that you guys on the Orient City went the Kickstarter route. I know a lot of people don't do that. I'm one of those people. I love the concept of Kickstarter. I wish I would have thought of Kickstarter. It's one of the technologies I daily
yeah.
wish I would have been on board at the beginning. It's such a good idea. When I lived in California, man, every other weekend, so this was years before Kickstarter, I was going to parties. Everybody was having fundraising parties. That's how they would, you know, try to get some money for to finish a film or finish a scene sometimes, you know. It you know how it goes. But
really
that's cool
that we're at a time that – like, I don't come from money. John Boer doesn't come from money.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to do these things that are kind of seeds, and I don't want, like, we set out to do the short. We were like, we're going to make the best short we can. When it wasn't let's make a short so that we can make a feature. Because I think that's the wrong attitude, because then you wind up making crap, and you're not really doing
right.
your fans a service. So our goal was always to make the absolute, that's why I kept growing, too. And kind of became sprawling 18 and a half minutes because we wanted to pack more story in there. As long as your intentions are good, it's such a great platform because we wouldn't have been able to bring that project to life. We wouldn't, I can't cut a check for that. And the sweat equity we would
right.
have to put in would have been, we put in a year of our lives each, and John were put in way more time because he drew everything.
Right.
You know, thousands of frames, and he composed the music, he oversaw he did all the visual effects, he did the matte painting backgrounds, like he colored the key colors. You know, he put, both of us put in a lot of sweat equity, but we wouldn't have been able to do that without, without, you know, being completely poor and living in our cars. And even
right,
then, I don't know how we would have paid
you
for gas. But yeah, like we got the sort of inspiration for that because we had finished Ram, the last graphic novel, and I had enough to pay him to do the artwork because this idea was burning a hole in my brain and I felt like I needed to get it out there. But when it was finished, it was like, I don't want to release this thing. We spent so much time on the art and it was like, I don't want to release this thing digitally. You know, I will if I have to, but and I knew a publisher wasn't going to come on for printing because the world of comic book graphic novel publishing has changed so drastically.
that it was like it made didn't make sense to go anywhere but Kickstarter. And we ran a campaign for the printing costs. That was it. 1,000 books, printing costs, and that took off. The response was awesome.
Nice.
And, you know, for a book about a neuroscientist trying to beat sleep, it's along the lines of, like, a Pi or a machinist. But it's a really kind of personal book, and it really kind of took off for us. And not like it set the world on fire, but it gave us confidence so that years later when we had, you know, Orient City, it was kind of like not should we use Kickstarter? It was, you know, what should our budget be and what should we go ask for? And
how are we going to use Kickstarter? Right.
Yeah. How are we going to use it? And I don't want to abuse the community on Kickstarter. I mean, we have so much stuff him and I are working on. And I don't want to abuse that community and take it for granted. But I get emails all the time. It's like, when's your next project? When's your next project? They're from Kickstarter people. And I'm like, well, I don't want to keep asking you for money. But if you're going to give it to me, we have, like, besides the other Orient City stuff, you know, we've bandied about the idea of doing an Orient City graphic novel based on the script. But obviously we want to be in production on the feature, so we don't know if that's possible. And but I do love Kickstarter. There are some films that get financed, and you see the numbers that they do. And I'm not talking about the Zach Braffs of the world. I'm talking about, like, smaller things that just catch fire, that it's just great. You know, maybe this film wouldn't have found this audience if it would have been made normally and through a distributor, and that person who made it wouldn't have done so well. And the fans that really had responded to it maybe wouldn't have ever seen it. I just think it's an ingenious thing. You know, whether it's hoodie that you need, or a backpack, or, you know, artwork. It's cool, and I've benefited from it twice, so I can't say enough good things about it. And the people that backed me on it, I just met a guy at New York Comic Con for lunch that backed my last two projects, and we had like a 5-hour lunch. We both of us were like, you want to go? And he was like, no, I don't want to go. I was like, oh, let's keep talking.
Well, that's cool. That is so cool. I have a friend of mine that she's a musician, and she's out of LA, and she has made her last 5 CDs with Kickstarter backing. And I kind of joke with her all the time. I'm like, man, you need to teach a learning annex class on how to do it. And she goes, it's almost a full-time job if you do it, if you're doing it right.
Yeah,
100%. And you're doing it well.
I put everything I had into the Kickstarter. I told everyone that's cool. I was like, hey, I'm taking a month off from everything so that I can focus on the Kickstarter for a month and a half. You know, it's a 30-day campaign, but you always,
right.
You can't rely on friends and family. They're only going to get you, especially like me, I've tapped that resource way too many. No one, trust me, my mom and dad don't care about samurai spaghetti westerns. They think it's cool that I'm doing this thing, but they don't. They could give a crap about a hand-drawn samurai spaghetti western that's bloody. So you got to get word out, and a lot of it is you can't just sit back and do a Kickstarter and say, hey, everyone's going to find it, because no one's going to find it. You got to go out there. You got to kind of put, and I'm an introvert. It's really hard to just be like, hey, I'm going to put myself out there. But you have to.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You
well, you've made a new friend here in South Florida. You can always come on the show and talk about any Kickstarter projects you got going. So remember that. You know,
nice.
Love to have you
back. You know what? I'm going to hit you up on that one day.
Dude. Absolutely. I'm telling you, and the numbers, when I first got into Kickstarter, what happened was I started doing the show about 4 years ago, and a friend of mine, like I said, I lived out in California, and a friend of mine got me into the whole thing, and he's like, well, you know all these, you know, celebrities and stuff, you can have them on your podcast. And I said, oh, okay, well, we'll do that. And that was great for about 6 months, and then I ran out of people I knew, and I started looking at Kickstarters. I started going on Kickstarter and just messaging people that had an interesting project going on. something I found interesting, you know, and said, hey, I'm doing this show. You want to be on the show? They were like, absolutely, you know, and it really worked out. But I was amazed in doing a little bit of that research. And some of these projects, not all projects get off the ground with it. But
that's why
some of them do. And
because it's all or nothing.
Right. Yep. You're all in. You're all in. And the thing also I like about Kickstarter, you have to have your ducks in a row. You know, nobody's making a Kickstarter campaign where they're like, well, I got to pay the light bill this month. Help me do that. Or, you know, it's
or you see right through those campaigns, and they're the ones that don't get financed.
Right. Yep. It's cool. I'm glad that worked out well for you guys. And, you know, I can't wait. I cannot wait to see the finished Orient City. I think it's going to be phenomenal. Just from what you've been telling me, man. Very, very cool. And, of course, folks, we can't forget about it. I'm looking at the time, and I apologize about that, Ryan, before we started the show. So, Ryan, you good for, you know, X amount of time? Oh, yeah. Well, we've only went past that 30 minutes. It's just been fun talking to you about these projects.
It feels like 10 minutes.
I'm telling you,
I hope the listeners also feel that way.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Man, I feel like this is like the longest hour of my life.
Oh, no. I shouldn't say which interview that was. But no, it's Suburban Cowboy, folks, and it's out. It's we have a link up to the Amazon, but it's also everywhere. It's on iTunes, you know, all over the place, wherever you watch digital movies. And I know everybody's got an HDMI cord hooked their TV like me. At least everybody I know does. And I don't think anybody sits and watches their laptop. Maybe they do. But everyone I know has it hooked to their TV and they watch this stuff on a, you know, Suburban Cowboy will look great on an 80-inch TV. It's just like being in a movie, you know. And the popcorn's a lot cheaper. Very, very cool. So I was looking at your Facebook page. You were just in Milan for Orient City, or was Orient City playing at a festival in Milan?
Orient City just this past week on Tuesday played at the Milano Film Festival, and then on Wednesday played at the Lund Fantastic Film Festival in Sweden. Next week it plays at the Rhode Island International Film Festival, and then right after that it plays at Cutout, which is a huge animation festival in Mexico, and then you know, we're out to a ton of others, but those are the first ones that kind of came in. But I was just in Milan. I went to Budapest when we finished the storyboards for the thumbnails storyboards for Orient City. I was going to come home, but I still had time on my – because I have 90 days in Europe until, you know, you're forced to come home or you get fined or you're not allowed back. And I was like, well, I'm Italian. I'm right here, even though I'm by myself. What is it? Like, let me check it out. A flight from Budapest to Milan was $15. So
wow.
I was like, I can't pass that up. That's a flight.
No, you gotta go.
I was eating lunch and my lunch cost more than my flight when I booked it. So I went to Milan. I was there for a few days. Then I went to on the west coast, La Spezia. Then I went to Florence, and then I went to Naples.
Nice.
And my family's from the south. I have relatives that are from the area by La Spezia, like Genoa and that area. But I had never been to Naples. I had been to Milan and Florence. I studied at Cambridge University for a year in undergrad.
Wow.
And I spent some time in Italy by myself. You know, it's different when you're 19 and then when you're, you know, my age, 38 at the time. So it was cool going back.
I did that in
cool.
I was going to say I did that a couple years ago in Asia. I went to Asia on my own, just me. I'd gotten out of a marriage, and I had a little bit of money, and I said, you know, I need a break. And I've always wanted to go to China and whatnot, and did it. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to cost me more. It would have, my plane ride from Budapest to New York was more expensive than me going to Milan and then me flying home from Naples. So I was like, I'm saving a bit of money there. It kind of evens out with the train rides from Milan to basically Naples, but I'm from Naples, mm-hmm. essentially. I need to go there. I'm here. You know, the food in Milan is, sorry, not Milan, like Italy in general is much cheaper than America. So it actually kind of evened out in the end. So I was psyched. It was really great. And, you know, it's hard after you've been away so long out of the country, not, you know, speaking English ever. But I was, by the end, I was like, all right, I'm ready to go back home. I miss my family and speak English.
Right.
Or not speak English as much as reading a menu in English.
Right.
But it was much easier in Italian than it was in Hungarian, because you look at some words and you're like, that means chicken? That has like three Z's in it. What's going on? But I had Jambor with me to kind of point things out and
translate.
Help. In Italy, I was basically by myself. And Jambor thankfully speaks fluent English, and we have pretty much the same exact interest. He's probably the only graphic novel artist that he's not the only graphic novel artist, but you know, both of us stick out like sore thumbs. He's an athlete and always has been, and he just got his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He was on the Hungarian national fencing team, and you know, he's a big dude, big muscular dude. I'm not a big muscular dude, but I played sports my whole life. I played lacrosse my whole life, and you know, I would consider myself an athlete before I consider myself an artist. Just based on the length of time I played sports compared to the length of time that I've done this. But I thank God for that guy every day.
It's fantastic, man, and it's fantastic. And it is about that time. I want to thank you, Ryan, for being on the show and telling us about your adventures and your various projects and whatnot. You know, it's, like I said, I'm a big fan after watching the Suburban Cowboy. It is it's up there. It's up there with one of my favorite films that I've seen recently. Definitely, definitely.
Oh, wow. You saw it. So yeah, I know we're getting off, but you said you're a huge fan of Westerns. What's your favorite Western?
Well, it depends, actually. There are there's some Japanese Westerns I like, believe it or not. But, you know, yeah, I like, you know, the classics, Unforgiven, 310 to Yuma, that vein. It depends on the mood. I like that time period just because life was complicated in a more simplistic way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things were handled a little differently. And sometimes I wish
that's
that
was I love it too,
still
like,
the case.
When, like, men were men, and if you got in a fight, no one cried about it.
Right. Well, and
but Sergio
Leone
is my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Phenomenal. Well, I was going to say,
the biggest influence on Orient City.
Oh, yeah. I can see it. It, yeah, it's a different world, man. A different world. It definitely, there were no computer keyboard trolls or anything. You know, and that's how we grew up, Ryan. Me and you're, you know, kind of, I think, cut of the same cloth. You know, you kind of had to watch what you say, otherwise, somebody might watch it for you. You know.
I don't abhor violence. I think violence has a place in our society. Like, I know I'm of, you know, I'll get in trouble in the kind of left wing artistic community for saying stuff like that. But like, sometimes you need a punch in the face. Sometimes if you say something stupid, like, you know, maybe you're going to get...
I certainly have met people who do.
I'm cool with that, but I'm of a small minority, I guess.
Well, it's just, I tell you, my thing is, I was saying this at a party recently, is where and how I grew up. You know, there was something, everybody has an ass kicking in life, and you'll meet people, and I don't know if it's the same with women, but I know for men, it enacts some humbleness, you know what I mean? And I've met people who haven't had that ass kicking yet, and you can tell them that right away. And it doesn't have to be a fight. It could be a woman or money or just life. But yeah, you don't want to be sitting next to them when it finally happens, because it just seems the longer it goes until that happens, the worse it's going to be. I've met many people.
Well, I mean,
like
you mentioned Harvey Weinstein before I got on the call, but like, he got his ass kicking this week, and he needed it. You know,
absolutely.
Someone should have happened a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's a whole.
There's no room for that.
No, absolutely, and it's just it sucks when people are human. I'm not justifying or making excuses for anybody, but I'm just saying it sucks when. When people, especially successful people and whatnot, I'm not one to joy at someone's comeuppance, but at the same time, justice is served. You know what I mean? It's that's the world we live in. And
I'm just disgusted. As someone who works in the industry, I'm just disgusted by
right.
it and how complicit people were. And now you're hearing there are, half a dozen suits that were settled.
Oh yeah.
All these agents and development executives, and everybody knew about it, and they were like, that disgusts
me. Yeah, see, that's I feel the same way. I feel the same. You almost want to take a shower after reading that. You know, you're like, how does that happen? And we all know, money.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, there are things that are more important than money. And, I guess that's that part of, like, I don't want to say, like, I said earlier, like, men were men, but it's, it's more of a phrase than anything. I don't mean to put women down in that way, but in the sense that people had more, like, the rules that they lived by. You know, that's what I love about the
right, honor.
Like, you live by a code, whether you're a guy or girl, irrelevant, right? And I feel like, not everybody, but part of me is, like, this the code of people is just gone. Money is the code, and I've never lived my life like that, and hopefully I never will. I don't want to get ahead of myself,
right.
But I've been humbled many times, and it disgusts me reading things like that, and I feel for everyone that was a victim for that, and I wish people had more of a backbone. That did not stand up, and I get why they didn't. Maybe they thought their career was,
right.
Exactly. And and it's easy for me to say because I'm not in their position, and I'd like to think that if I was, I would have been.
But you know what, Ryan?
More of a backbone,
me and you wake up every day. Me and you get up out of bed every day, and we don't do shit like that, and we don't play it like that, And that's the difference.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't want that stink on me. That's all I'm saying, Bad news.
I think I was just talking to somebody earlier that said, like, there's a lot of other filmmakers out there or people in high power out there in our industry that are scrambling right now because they're freaking out that the same thing is going to happen to them. Because he's not the only creep.
No, there's a lot of creeps out there. And, maybe it's my age. If I get to where I am in life, you get to a point where you're like, I don't have the stomach for nonsense or the patience for nonsense, I guess, like that, If I see a creep out there doing, I just won't do business with them. I just pass, And it's, that's what works for me. I'm not saying that works for everybody else, but I don't have time for that, It's just crazy. Ryan, you're awesome. I want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule and being on the show and
rescheduling and whatnot. I apologize about us having to postpone the first date, but it all worked out. It all worked out. Very, very
thanks
cool.
for having me, and just like to thank all the listeners that made it through. Hopefully you enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate them as well. And folks, that's going to do it for us tonight. Tomorrow we have an independent singer-songwriter, J.J. McQuinn, is going to be on from Wichita, Kansas, alternative rock performer. Very, very cool. Tune in for that. That'll be an early show, 8 o'clock on the East Coast and 5 o'clock on the West. This show, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms, including up for free on iTunes on their podcasting page. If you are listening to the show in the future on iTunes, hello from the past. Do me a quick favor, though. It doesn't cost anything. Hit that ratings and review. It keeps us up at the top of the page, and that's where we like to be, baby. And, you know, to be honest, our advertisers like it as well. So that's a good thing. Ryan, thanks again. Keep doing what you're doing, man. You're real good at it. And I'm not just saying that. It's very true. Very, very true.
My mom will thank you. She's not the only one that believes that now.
Nice. Well, that's true. I speak the truth. Hey, have a good night, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow. Good night, Ryan.
Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.